All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We are into the final stretch here of the National Hockey League. A lot of teams already done. Canadian teams still wrapping up for the better part of a week, unless you're Calgary or Vancouver. But the Leafs clinching first overall in their division, first time in 20 years they've done that, only the second time in 60 years. I couldn't believe that when I saw that stat on Saturday night.
That's something else.
It's really incredible. Okay. Like, it's actually incredible that they have the fan base that they have that is so loyal, so dedicated, so massive, and, like, winning a division is something that has to be celebrated and probably should be.
Don't do it. Sometimes you combat some success with the negative train in the history and you tie it into being stressed out. Don't do that today.
Don't be stressed
right
now.
It's like a positive, like somehow you'll talk about a successful stretch and it'll lead you down the trades they've made in the last 20 years. And you'll throw your arms up in the air, and a positive just turns into a negative. Don't do it today.
Yeah, but he's not going to do it. What you're doing is pointing out, like, you're rejoicing, but you're like, what the hell took so long? That's what it is.
Well, 60 correct? Years is significant.
No, I mean, I didn't – I heard the stats on the weekend. I kind of glossed over it. I mean, I've been here 10 years. This is the most amount of success the regular season they've had. And, you know, although – I mean, I thought about it. There were other times where they were kissing up near the top of the league. I mean, you could argue, I don't know where they were last year when the league shut down.
They were pretty far down. They were barely in a playoff spot. Like, that gets forgotten. Florida was like 3 points behind them, and there were about 10 games to go. But they set a record a few years ago with 105 points in a regular season.
Yeah, that
is most all time. And I'm not trying to put a negative slant on it. I'm just putting it into perspective here because sometimes I forget. I've lived in the city my whole life. I've followed this team as closely as you could possibly follow them. And even I get taken aback sometimes by, you know, the losing or the negative slant of records. But that is not the case this year. They are the best team in the division. This was not a fluke. It's not like they just got Vezina-esque goaltending all year, although Jack Campbell's been very good. But point being is it was top to bottom. You know, Sheldon Keefe, I think, said it appropriately on Saturday night. Last year they were arguably a bottom five defensive team. This year they've been a top five based on how they played. The eye test and stats would back that up. So credit to the Leafs and credit to fans who have been along for the ride. And now you know you've clinched. We're pretty certain who they're going to play. You know, it's likely going to be Montreal. And now the real stuff starts, and we'll find out in about a week and a half whenever we get to game one.
Yeah, go ahead, O.
No, just thank God. It was like for years we were watching, and Noodles would talk about just what was going on in their own zone. I think even since the Phil and Dion days, like it was such an easy fix to play in your own zone, and they finally figured that out.
Yeah, but
it was like the quality of chances they've been giving up for so long. Like, just thank God they fixed it. It's like, and it's not, nothing's a game of perfect when you're talking about your own zone, Brian, and protecting your net and playing in front of your goaltender. But
it's a lot better than it has been.
Oh, my God. Thank God it's been addressed.
It has, but you know what? Like, it wasn't, Sheldon Keefe doesn't play. It was the players that had to do it. Obviously, choosing the right players to play the system, but
yeah, but Jamie, they apparently had the best coach that's ever coached in the league, and he couldn't get them to play defense either. So defense is coaching.
You're right, but you guess who bought in? Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, John Tavares, like William Nylander, like those guys. Well, Tavares was already a really good two-way player. Matthews has developed into one. Mitch Marner has developed into one. I don't lay it at the feet of Babcock. It took a long time for those guys to arrive as, like, real good, complete players. We knew they were stars in the making. I mean, Austin Matthews is star day one. Mitch Marner, we thought, was going to be what he was today. But they've developed into complete players where, you know, in year one, year two, where Babcock was saying, you got to play the right way, you got to play. Like, I think it was just a process. Maybe I'm wrong, but I
think it applies. That's definitely applicable to some
players.
Guys.
Right,
yeah, exactly.
It's not just those two. You've got a better roster than, like you say, when it was, you know, Dion and Corbinian Holzer or Mike Koska and, you know, Gunnarsson. You go right down the list. Like,
well, and I think that is something that is definitely worthy of pointing out. I think their defense core, their top four in particular, has actually been solidified since day one of camp. Like, there's been very little movement. Sheldon Keefe is known for mixing things up and throwing different things at the wall, and it's happened occasionally, but for the most part, since day one, it's been Riley with Brody, and Brody is the most unassuming player, unassuming personality. We call that. I haven't heard from this guy all year. Haven't seen him, haven't heard him, no idea what he does.
The best.
But he just shows up and plays. He performs. He's there every single night. You don't even hear about this guy getting nicked up, bruised, nothing. He's immune from the injury report, let alone or cameras
I
or
love
anything.
It, Hayes. Even when he's on the ice, not a peep. It's like nothing happens defensively.
Nothing.
It's like up the zone, couple quality shots. It's everything about it is quiet, which is the best kind of defenseman to have.
You know what I would call him? And we, you know, I watched it in Calgary even when he first came in. He's cagey. So if you watch little plays, he runs interference is the wrong word. He gets in his lane. He'll hold up for his defense partner. Like, he's cagey. Knows a hit's coming, turns away. Like, he's just smart. Like, it's a quiet game, but it's a smart game.
It's a very effective game. Like, I honestly, I'm saying this as someone that I've seen probably 90% of his shifts this year. I don't remember a great play, and I don't really remember an awful play. Like, I don't really remember. I know there have been, clearly, on both ends of it, but for the most part, it's just, man, he played 23 minutes, and that was pretty good. Like, that was effective.
That's such a positive thing. It's such a weird comment to make to somebody who doesn't really have the eye to see it, but it's such a compliment to say that about a guy where it's like he goes out there and plays that amount and it's non-event. Obviously, he gets the puck to Morgan Riley. He does so many things offensively that contribute and support victories, but that's what you want. The thing I like about him, when I watched him in Calgary, and I kind of look at players differently, the way they kind of move on the ice, I thought of him as I always refer to them as like short stick defensemen, where it's like they don't have much reach. But he kind of, his frame looks bigger. I don't know if it's the number he's wearing. He's using a bigger stick. But he seems to be covering ground, and he's been awesome, man. Awesome.
There's one game in particular where I thought he was brilliant this year. It was against Edmonton, and there was about five or six instances where he had this unbelievable stick. Like poking pucks away,
yeah,
taking away to
down.
It was like, and I know he'd done it every night. And like, to your point, Brian, I don't disagree. I remember one particular night where it was like Brody's night to shine, where it was on McDavid, on Draisaitl, closing lane, stick, frustrating, little extra here. That game for me was his best game of the season, where he was noticeable. Everything else is just quiet.
Absolutely. And I remember night two of the season when he was at Ottawa. I remember he was awful that night. That was the second game of the year. Those are the two extremes.
Right,
And you're right in terms of the subtlety, where if you watch it, you're like, that's a really smart play. That's a really good play. It's a really effective play. I guess the term I should use is flashy one way or the other. You know, like, I haven't seen him so out of position, or a pizza up the middle, or, you know, where he's flat-footed and getting burned by a guy he shouldn't be. Or vice versa, he's rarely, you know, leading a rush or a guy that really jumps into gaps in the offensive zone. He's just subtle, and he plays his role very well and appropriately.
Right.
And that was a great signing that has worked out. And to further my point, you have Riley and Brody and Muzzin and Hall. You have a top four here that has been solidified since day one. None of them are young. You know, Hall doesn't have a ton of NHL experience, but what is he, 29? Morgan Riley's 27. Riley's still the youngest of the four. And he's 27 years old, and it feels like he's been in the league for 15 years. So you have guys who have been through, you know, the ringer a little bit, guys with experience, guys who understand their game, guys who are not trying to prove that they should be up a peg, which I think is really important, because you're just comfortable with who you are. Justin Hall is the fourth defenseman. He's not trying to prove to Sheldon Keefe he should be the first or the second.
And as a group, they have one thing to prove, and that's in the playoffs, that a team can have success without an alpha dog, a Victor Hedman. And that's what their job as a group is. That's what they have to prove.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where you bring in the whole team, though, in terms of finishing
off
this whole team defense thing and being top five. That's where, if you do have a bit of a mismatch, and, you know, depending on who you're going up, if you play Connor McDavid right now, Victor Hedman's dealing with a mismatch. There isn't a defenseman in the league who isn't up against a mismatch if McDavid's on the ice. So you need everyone to help you with that.
I
can't
agree.
Just be one parent.
I don't know about you guys. Like, Saturday night was must-watch TV. I'm just like Matthews has been, you know, getting four. Like, I don't
you
know.
You could feel it early, couldn't you? When he, like, he was dancing, like, you're like, he's got four or five of them tonight.
I'm like, this guy's not going to be stopped. Like, it was, there was two or three times where he was almost demanding the puck. Like, just give it to me. Like, I know. And I thought it was really cool that that one power play where he got it. If you look at the play leading up to the 100th point, they had an opportunity to take it to the net, but he hadn't touched it yet. They kind of rejigged so that they could work it around the top of the house and get it to McDavid. Then he made the play. But it was almost like Draisaitl and all of them were like, this guy's getting it tonight. Once you saw that he had one and two and was dancing, they're like, I was like, he's not going
to
be shut down.
And his face after that, when Draisaitl scored to give him that fourth point of the night, 100 on the season, he knew it. It was just like Matthews when Matthews scored his 40th. Like, they are naturally kind of subdued players to an extent. I mean, they do have some outburst and celebration. When you get that many points, they happen. Like, they're known right. to burst out, but they're not big personalities, you know, naturally, or at least they won't show them publicly, McDavid and Matthews necessarily. But when Matthews scored, it was a 5-2 game at that point, and he was trying to find a balance where it was like, I'm not going to jump into the stands here because I don't want to embarrass this team, but I know I hit 40.
Right. I think he pumped into the glass and then turned around and subdued himself. If you watch that replay again, he knows he scores. He turns into the glass so that there's no view of him.
Right.
And he kind of like pumps.
He like composes himself.
And
almost.
Then turns around and composes himself like, yeah, I got it, like type of thing.
Yeah.
But I saw the emotion on that one. And Connor's a very subdued guy.
Do they keep playing him? Do they keep playing him? Is he playing tonight?
I don't know. What do you guys – they're playing tonight. I have mixed feelings on this, guys. Like,
I say, see you at playoffs, pal.
I know you can't bubble wrap guys, but God forbid, you know, like, all I could think of is freak accidents. And knock on wood for everyone. That's not Edmonton, Toronto. I'm talking everyone. Like, Aaron Ekblad was having a season. And it's a non-contact play in the corner and twists his ankle. Like, I just want guys to get to the playoffs so that we have, like, even matchups, if that makes sense.
I don't think he's going to sit for all three. He's got three more games left. They may not play for another 10 days. I don't get the impression like McDavid's going to sit. I don't get the impression like Matthews and company are going to sit. Like, the Leafs are quite literally not playing for anything. Like, I guess maybe you're still in a race in terms of the reseeding of the Final Four if you get there. You know, but even that is totally unpredictable. Who's to say a team that's way down the standings doesn't get to the Final Four and you end up playing them and you have home ice anyway? And I don't know what home ice is even going to look like, you know, because down in the States, they're going to have full barns. But up here, I don't even think they're going to let them play up here. So they're probably going to be down in the States anyway. So I'm not sure really what you're fighting for outside of last change. But the comfort zone stuff, I'm not sure it's going to apply to whichever Canadian team is standing there in the Final Four. But
right.
I get the impression like the Leafs are going to play it out. You know, they play Wednesday, Friday, and then they might be off for the better part of 5 days and – kind of similar thinking out in Edmonton because the Oilers are in the same spot. They're not.
What do you think,
they're going to finish second. They know it. They're not moving anywhere.
What do you think, though? Do you just play them like, oh, what would you do, Hayes? What would you do? Like just regular shift but not double down type of thing? Or do you just give them the 22, 23 minutes?
I wouldn't grind them into the ground. I don't think that makes sense at all. I definitely cap their minutes.
So power play, regular shift, but roll
power
the line,
play, go out there and do whatever the hell you want. Stay out for 2 minutes if you want, but you're going to get spot duty after that.
Yeah,
see, I want to see what guys got, and you're not going to be logging 25 minutes ice time.
All I could think of is when we won the President's Trophy in 99 with St. Louis, I think there was some bonus stuff involved. I think I talked about that, you know, Demetra and all that. But
this
like,
guy doesn't
that was
have
the year
a
before.
Bonus.
No, what I'm, saying is, what I'm saying is like Pronger, I think, played that game, you know, that last game where – you know, a defenseman could get hit with a shot from the point, like that type of stuff. A forward can kind of get out of the way and go through a no-hitter in a night. You can hide. Like a defenseman, it's a little bit tougher to hide with pressure and shots coming. Like my point is I tried to think of how you get them in the lineup so that they can at least play and try and get some points and stuff. But
if I'm
also,
coaching Jamie, they're not playing, period. I'm sorry.
So the whole week, like, dude, you're going to shut down. But now all of a sudden, you've got, to Brian's point, the Leafs and the Oilers don't play for now really almost a week and a half to two
probably
weeks,
about
depending
10 days,
on.
Yeah.
Right, at least 10, minimum 10 days starting today. That's if you can play on that Wednesday where Calgary and Vancouver, if you can get them into an afternoon situation. So that's 10 days. It's not the worst.
Well, and let's not forget, on top of all this, you've got a salary cap that makes things as complicated as possible.
True.
So you may be in a situation where I don't even know if you can just sit that many guys out. You know, where do you draw the line? How do you go to Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and say, you're out, but John Tavares, you're older, the captain, you still have to play?
Well, who would you sit? If you had your choice of and not five guys, but if it was the Leafs, the last two games, to protect what you believe is the integrity of the lineup and the most important pieces, who's not playing for you?
Well, in terms of the most important pieces, I mean, it's probably ultimately going to be the goaltender, but that's where it gets sticky because you kind of need to play Freddie Anderson.
You're bang on. Like, and I was like, Campbell, it would be Campbell that
Campbell
he'd worry
would
about.
Be the guy I'd want to maybe take a step back, and you're probably putting it in a position where Freddie's going to likely play one of these games, although Sheldon Keefe said today still hasn't been cleared to play at the NHL level.
What?
I'm not sure
what that means.
I don't know.
That's cap.
Could be cap management, and they're still trying to figure that out. But it's, you know, you start with your goaltender in terms of what you could be dealing with and how important that position is, and then it probably is Matthews, Marner, Tavares, like those three. But I don't know if they're going to do that. I think the players will have a say in this. I could see a scenario where if you're in Toronto, you play everyone on Wednesday, and then on Friday maybe you sit people once you get to that final game, and you know maybe you make a decision there. The same thing with Edmonton, although they have three more games. It's complicated. It's not an easy situation. We'll ask Ray about that. Ray's coming up. Ray Ferraro just after 5 o'clock. Scott Mitchell later in the hour. Nate Pearson made his debut yesterday. And
wild thing?
Man, he couldn't get anyone to swing and miss. He walked, what did he walk, five guys? Like, he looked nervous, and he's been in that position before. I believe last year when he got called up, he had a similar start where it was really kind of stiff, and he looked timid on the mound, and he didn't look good. And the issue with the Jays right now is their starters, which was the big conversation throughout the offseason, they're starting to show the cracks. Right, like I looked it up before the show. They have a starters team ERA of 4.88. That's bottom three, I believe, bottom four in the American League. So, you know, Stripling got rocked. You've got Ryu who's dealing with this injury issue. Pearson, we don't know what he is. Roark's already been designated for assignment. You know, Robbie Ray's been pretty good. Mats was good early. He's coming back to earth. And I think we all know what he is. He's a back-of-the-rotation guy. That's the concern, man, is their bullpen is still chugging for the most part, but their starters are starting to cause some concern. You know, when the numbers are getting bloated.
That start yesterday, Brian, I was like, he's one of those guys where if his stuff's on, he's just got this big presence about him. You're like, this is the flamethrower. He's the future, blah, blah, blah. So you're tuning in, and you're like, they rush this guy up here, and I don't know what you do from there. I mean, during the broadcast, they said, this guy could use a chat with Pete Walker. I'm like,
it's his first start.
I know, but what the hell's Pete Walker going to tell him? Stop hitting the mascot? I mean, there was a couple that were over the head, and I'm like,
just a bit
of time. That's Grappler. That's Grappler's boy, isn't it, Randy Johnson?
It is. Randy Johnson yesterday making his season debut. That's right. Yep, that was Randy Johnson, courtesy of
the Grappler. Don't know where the coaching element comes into that. Is it like you got to just get to work and get back in there, throw bullpen? I don't know.
I mean, ultimately, it's about aggression. Like, he's a guy who can hit 100 on the gun, and, like, he's pretty consistently with
ease. And the word is this guy's trying to hit 106, 110. I don't know what the hell
he's
doing.
How about hit the strike zone? Yeah, like,
don't worry
about 106 or 107.
Dude, you can tell they were sitting dead red on this guy. They're like, one of these things is going to come around the strike zone, and I'm going to hit it when it does.
Yep, that's right. And that's what happened to him last year when he first got caught. I think it was I want to say it was against the Sox at Fenway, I believe. And he was just throwing heat. There wasn't any movement on it, and he was leaving them up and in, and they just sat on it. It takes a while, but major leaguers, it doesn't matter if it's 98, if it's 102, if it's 106. If it doesn't move and it's predictable, they will catch up to it. And it's just a matter of time in the bigs. and that's what happened to him yesterday. And, you know, he didn't even get through three innings. He walked five guys. It wasn't good. It was an ugly start for Nate Pearson. Now, a guy of that stature, you throw him back out there in 4 days, you know, 5 days. You give him that opportunity to circle back, and you're going to need him at some point, or you believe you're going to need him. But, yeah, I'm with you. Pete Walker, I guess, would say calm the nerves, move the pitches around, and, you know, what are you going to do? Hit the strike zone. Like, that was the big story all year.
Pete Walker's going to say, you know, calm the nerves, calm down, and he'll say, I threw one that was 10 feet over the catcher's head.
Yeah.
Like, I need more than to be calmed down. I don't know. I hope he sorts it out, because there's a lot of hype, there's a lot of expectation, and the bottom line is, more than that, they need him. They need quality starts.
They do need quality starts. This rotation needs them. There's a reason why, you know, they gave him the one minor league tune-up, and they've been stretching him out, and they said, you're going. You know, and that's a tough spot, too. You're on the road in Houston. The Astros are a pretty good team. You know, borderline packed barn where they have 25,000 people there.
Sickening.
And, like, I wonder about that psychology of athletes, too. The fact that, like, fans are just back. And it's somewhat of a matter of fact. Like, you've been performing in front of nobody for the better part of a year, and now it's like, no, we got 25,000 people here. Or if you're golfing over the weekend, packed house.
I switch it up a little bit, Brian. You know what I go to? I go to the psychology of myself. I was watching the golf, and there were guys so gooned on that golf course walking around with beers, yelling obnoxious things. And I'm watching the golf, and everyone's walking around, and it's golf, and it's awesome. And then I looked at my little putting mat in my living room, and I was like, that's my golf course.
Yeah.
There's where I tee it up every day. I roll 6-foot putts, and that's my course, because this country and this province is such a joke.
Well, I mean, in terms of where we're going with the outdoor activities and stuff, it sounds like it's going to be extended, but I don't know what to say about that anymore. Yeah. Couple more weeks. Yeah, we'll just keep grinding here. But it felt like McIlroy, yeah, maybe it was a coincidence because his game came together. What a pick, I got to say. I rarely pat myself on the back.
Dude, I got to say, Daniel Rappaport, who we had on, he made that pick for you. You said, who do you like? And he was like, I really like Rory this week. You're like, okay, I'll take him. You didn't take him on your own.
If you can recall, dude, the guy's phone line, he was calling from 10,000 feet below, you know.
He was on the pond. He was in the pond at 13.
I couldn't hear him anyway. I couldn't hear him anyway. So I didn't even hear that answer. I don't even know what you're talking about. I had Rory written down as of Wednesday morning. I'm thinking, I'm all over McIlroy. He loves Quail Hollow. That's the third time he's won there.
Hasn't hit a fairway in 3 weeks.
I know.
You did not make that pick.
But look what he did on 18 yesterday. That's
a perfect example. That was a bizarre situation. You're telling me he couldn't have grabbed a lob wedge and hit that out in the fairway?
Well, he hit a 3-wood, I believe.
Dude, like, I know, but I could not believe he did not try to chip that onto the fairway.
That must have
been the worst lie I've ever seen in my life, because he put 6 right into play in a playoff.
Well, but that 8-iron he hit after that drop was one of the best 8-irons you're ever going to see. Like, that was like a foot below his feet, somewhat buried, and he hit that thing on a rope. And then 2 putts from about 40 feet. Ice in his veins. Rory's back. I love him in 2 weeks at Kiawah Island, too.
Oh, really? We'll see.
We'll have an extensive draft
for that. That last major there where he dominated was unbelievable golf.
He won by 8 strokes, I believe it was. Like, he ran away from the field.
That's when he was the King Daddy Topper on tour.
That was, and maybe he's circling the wagons again, and it feels good to be back in the winner's circle, man. That was a great win by my boy Rory McIlroy.
Okay, well, you can scratch that off one of the hundreds that you owe
That's
me.
That's not true. Dude, we established it last week. I'm back in the black.
No way,
dude.
I'm not doing this.
I'm back in the black. I mean,
no way, okay. No way.
We'll
up 100 now. If you win another 100, we're even.
You just create these bets that never happened. You know what you are? You're Bob Baffert. That's who you are. We'll come back and talk about your boy, Bob Baffert, who has come up with two of the most outrageous explanations in the history of sports why his horse is basically being attacked.
We'll have a contest after the break. Whose comments are more outrageous, Jack Eichel's or Bobby Bass?
All right, Jack Eichel, Bob Baffert. There's a lot to break down here in terms of what's been going on recently. That more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so we're going to have to call up our boy Eddie Olchuk here, I think. maybe we circle back with Eddie, because the Preakness is this weekend, and Medina Spirit, my understanding, is on her way down. She's on her way down to Baltimore and is planning on running in the race, but no one knows if they're even going to allow the horse to run.
Because the horse is
A-Rod. Yeah, the horse is in a little bit of trouble. It tested positive for some sort of PED. And Bob Baffert, your boy, Bob Baffert, is right in the middle of this.
No, he's your boy. You think Bobby Baffs is cooler than Tom Brady?
Well, this is his Deflategate moment. It's actually very fitting. Like, yeah. Brady had to go through a bit of a storm, right, with Deflategate. And I think Medina Spirit and this PED is similar to that for Bob Baffert.
Bobby Baffs is starting to sound like Rafael Palmeiro, man. He's saying things like there was another horse that pissed on the hay, and then this guy ate it, and then I don't know how this got his.
Okay, we got to play it, because this is the clip, all right? It wasn't another horse. It was the groom, yeah. Which is the guy who's in there. Basically, Bob
So it was
Baffert.
The human pissed on the yeah. hay, and the horse ate it? Come
yeah.
on.
Yes, Bob Baffert is claiming, we'll play this clip, that some guy who's in there, you know, cleaning stuff
way,
up
bro.
And feeding and dealing with the hay, basically took a leak on the hay, and that's why Medina Spirit tested positive is the most outrageous.
So the guy cleaning up the cow crap or the horse yeah. crap is on roids?
No. He had like a cough medicine or something like that.
Oh, Jesus. That's
he taking
Bobby
some
Bass.
Tylenol flu.
Taking
yeah,
some Tylenol. Much. Okay, this was Bob Baffert, I want to say, on the Dan Patrick show earlier today.
I had a groom that urinated. He had COVID, and after he's getting over, he urinated in the stall, and the horse ate it. It was a cough medicine. We resolved that.
There's just no way that's true, Bob Baffert.
So I'm misremembering.
A drunk groom went out into the stalls and took a leak into the hay, which probably, I mean, makes sense. But he was getting over COVID and had taken some cough medicine. And then the horse ate it.
Yeah, like this kind of feels like the Fall Guy. You know, like we need this groom, whoever this is, this yeah. alleged groom, to start doing the rounds.
Exactly.
We want to hear from this guy. Because I had never heard of this. Like, horse terminology is not in my wheelhouse. I think I can speak for all of us.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
sure.
Eddie O tripped this up last time he was on when he was – what word did he use? Gelding. He was talking about gelding, and we're like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. We had no idea what he meant. A horse groom, they are generally responsible for tasks such as mucking out stalls, feed preparation and distribution, cleaning and refilling water containers, grooming and bathing, cleaning the tack, bandaging up legs, like basically Bill Murray in Caddyshack. Like that's yeah. what we're talking about here. And that's
and I'm
the fall
pretty
guy.
Sure Bobby Baff's groom dude just wouldn't take a piss right in the stall in front of the horse.
No way.
You know, like he might go, like imagine Bobby Baffert walking by and this guy's just hanging a leak right in the ground on the hay.
This is $100 million
yeah.
horse.
Yeah, and this guy's taking a leak right in front
there's
of
him. Into his stall.
Yeah, yeah. Bobby like, Baffs would say, there's a bathroom right there and you're, like it just didn't
you're fired
happen.
Immediately. There's no way.
Yes.
These horses are treated better than kings and queens.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no way. Bill Murray is cruising around there taking a squeege.
Yeah. And I don't want to play like lawyer here, but how did Bobby Baffs ever find that information
well,
out?
Because it's
the groom would never admit that he took a leak on the hay.
Here's where you guys lost me. You said the groom. I thought that he was having like a wedding at his. At the guy
no.
got hammered at the wedding.
No.
And went out and took a leak in the barn because he was drunk. Like, groom is actually the groomer, right? Like,
yes, exactly.
I was like, why is there a groom? Like is he having a wedding and the guy's drunk and decides to go and get
– Wouldn't that be a better
a
story?
That's a better story. That's what I was thinking. He had a party and a drunk went and pissed in the horse's stall.
Right.
Not
no.
a groomer.
No,
the groom
is a horse terminology. You know, whoever's kicking around the barn all the time and making sure that everything's, you know, prepped and ready to go with the horses. So whoever that is taking the heat here and basically is the fall guy for Bob Baffert. So he had that one comment. This one takes the cake, though, for me. We're talking about a horse here, and he is citing cancel culture as the reason why this is all happening. This is Bob Baffert earlier this morning.
Churchill Downs came out with that statement that was pretty harsh. And I think they had to just, you know, it's, you know, with all the noise going out, you know, we live in a different world now. This America is different. And this, it was like a cancel culture kind of a thing. So they're reviewing it. I haven't been told anything. We're prepared to run.
So cancel culture is at the forefront of a horse testing positive for some sort of performance enhancing drug. That is a new one for Bob Baffert, but I like it. I like it. That's creative. It's better than the groom. You know, I think that's going a step further. That's really going to get people fired up. Cancel culture is the reason why the horse racing game is under such scrutiny right now.
It's almost like he's got every angle covered, but I mean, I don't know. I was reading the story. He said it's such a low dose anyways, it wouldn't have affected the horse's performance, and he feels like he's got a target on his back. Like, is he the victim here, or is he just, you know, is this the guy's so successful that people are trying to take him down, or is it just ridiculous?
I doubt it. I mean, I think if you're in the horse racing game long enough, it's a pretty dirty operation. I mean, we, you know, without knowing exactly what could have happened, what did happen, my understanding is Bob Baffert this isn't his first foray into some accusations and some different testing. And, you know, basically if you're in the game long enough as a trainer, as an owner, there's some shady stuff going on. You know, you're dealing with a test patient here, your horse who's never going to admit to anything, right? Like, you're never going to get caught. If you don't get caught via the testing, it's not like a horse is going to admit to it later on.
Right.
Put you in a bad spot. So, but everyone's just outraged because, like, the gamblers, right? No one yells and screams more than a gambler that feels like they got screwed. So if you had a big bet on whoever finished second, right, you're freaking right now. You're demanding your money back, and I don't think that's going to happen. And this always puts, you know, sports books in a weird spot because you still got to pay it out, but you probably feel like you shouldn't have to, you know, if the course is basically being disqualified.
I'm going to have to reach out to my buddy Frank Fontana. He's the guy, I remember, Strutty's buddy. Like,
in
Edmonton, the horse races. He handicaps the horse race. I wonder if he would know a story of people just taking a leak in stalls and stuff like that. Maybe
Frank
he would
Fontana
believe or not.
Would know.
I guarantee
he would know.
You. I'll bet you he's heard it as an excuse before. I mean, is it possible it could happen? I suppose. I don't know. I don't know enough about this, but it seems like a pretty far-fetched, excuse or explanation, but
the horse ate the hay.
Yeah, that ate the hay, and oh, it tested positive. Small dose, doesn't matter anyway. But we'll see what happens with the Preakness, because as far as I know, he has not officially been disqualified or taken out. So we'll see if he shows up with the Preakness. Man, we're dealing with some pretty crazy stuff. Bob Baffert, like, and I got to think Bob will be down there, decked out, three-piece suit. The mane will be flowing. He'll have his tinted shades on, and he'll be right in the middle of all of it.
It's crazy.
So you referenced Jack Eichel as well, because Eichel was speaking today.
His name has changed to Mark Messier. Sorry, I didn't know that.
I don't know, guys, where you're at. Like, I think he's out of there. Like, that, it's not even a, like,
well, Jamie,
I don't even think
for how many years.
But I don't think he's sugar. This is the first time I've actually heard him publicly go, like, I don't know where. And what, now you've got a medical situation.
There's where I have the issue.
That's where I've got a problem.
This is the NHL, and Kevin Adams is not an idiot. He knows that it's his best player, and when you have a medical issue, okay, here's our expertise. Do you want to go see someone else? I'm not sure how the lines of communication can get screwed up in this process, but go play somewhere else if you want, man. Right now, you got a guy acting like a god, a Mark Messier, and he's a guy that can skate well and shoot the puck. That's about all he's accomplished in the NHL. Yeah, he's a good player. He's talented. But he's done squat other than that.
I have to think two things. I think he's out of there, and you trade him sooner than later so that this doesn't drag out. I think there'd be a lineup of teams for him. I think
good.
He's a fantastic player.
Yeah.
I think he needs to go to a situation where he's maybe more suited. Like, we've said this all along. These guys have a window. He talked about it. He's like, I have a window with my career. I want to play. I want to, you know, all of this stuff. Yeah, he's been banged up this year. It hasn't gone so well. But I could think of 10 teams that would throw their hand up and go, I need this guy yesterday.
Good.
There's no doubt about that. There's no questioning his talent and his ability when he's out there. But both of their reputations have been I think, tarnished a little bit. I mean, the Sabres, I'm not sure it can get any worse. Like, it's difficult to get anyone that's going to support the Buffalo Sabres. They've been a mess for a decade. Awful. Yes. Disaster for a decade. And I don't see it turning around anytime soon. So Jack Eichel is naturally connected to that. He hasn't – obviously, the injuries have been what they are. He's been fairly outspoken at different times. I mean, I feel like this is just deja vu. We keep – every single offseason, it's the same thing. You know, COVID has adjusted our lives in many ways. Not that Jack Eichel wants out of Buffalo tour. That's just been ongoing for 3 years now. And then eventually, cooler heads prevail, and it's all good, and he sticks around.
Get it over with, Brian.
Well, you better get your price, though. That's the issue. Like, if Buffalo – this is their big trade – they're the laughingstock of the NHL. If he demands out and you accept that invitation and you push him out as a result, you better not pull a Joe Thornton trade, you know, like Boston did. You better not just get a few NHL pieces that you think will get you 10 more points in the standings this year. You need studs and multiple picks. You need a lot.
It's got to be comparable.
It's got to be. And it's a big ticket, too, which makes it a little bit complicated. I mean, what's he making, $10 million, I believe?
Yeah. You can't get anything comparable, Jamie, because the guy coming the other way is going to be a younger guy that's unproven. But you better hope that he turns out in his prime to be comparable, that's for sure.
Well, maybe you can find a one-for-one.
But that's what I was saying. Like,
maybe
we've
seen one one-for-one.
I don't know. That you would move for him?
But it may not have to. Like, that's the thing. It may not be a centerman. They may have to develop one, but it might be a stud winger. It might be a stud. It might be Johansson for Jones. It might be, you know, Dubois for Laine. It might be something like that where you have to pick up somebody that's got term on their deal so that they get to Buffalo and go, I'm out of here in a year and a half when my deal's up. Like, you have to find that right cost control situation. Because Jack Eichel, regardless of what you think of him, I think he's a star player under cost control. Yeah, it's a lot of money, but you know, I think he's got 5 years left on his deal, I believe, at $10 million a year.
Mid-20s, and if he's healthy and playing and he's, you know, motivated with good players, I think he'll make that work for sure. I mean, he'll be worth that money.
The only thing you can get under cost control is going to get a guy like Byfield, where he's not making he's on an entry level deal, and you could make him fall in love with Buffalo and be there long term. That would be a situation, Brian.
Here's another thing. If you're talking big ticket guys who have no trade contracts, chances are they're not waiving for Buffalo. Chances are Buffalo's on their list.
That's right.
And that's another thing that makes it complicated, too.
I believe, that's the thing. We'd have to look into it. I'm not convinced he has a no-trade right now.
I'm not saying Eichel. I'm saying if you
you're right.
You call up 28-year-old player X, he's like, I'm not going to Buffalo. Check the contract. Absolutely not. So, right. And you're not getting a guy to waive for that either. There's no way a guy's going to waive a no-trade list when he's got Buffalo on it, considering their current state. So that makes it even more difficult, I would think. Ray, in about 20 minutes, Scott Mitchell on Nate Pearson, his debut yesterday. The Jays dropping 2 of 3 in Houston. We'll get to that next. All right, Ray Ferraro will join us in about 20 minutes more on the Leafs clinching first overall in the division over the weekend. McDavid hitting 100 points. The plan for McDavid, Matthews, and others into the future here with some regular season games still to go. Jays are off tonight. They're in Atlanta tomorrow. Atlanta actually signed Tanner Roark to a minor league deal. And I kind of hope somehow it works out and he's in Atlanta by tomorrow night. I don't picture that being the case. It's probably an impossibility.
How is that going to work out?
It's not to happen. He's never going to touch the majors again. It's a flyer, but whatever. I just want to see him pitch against the Jays, get the bats warming up. Here's our Jays reporter, Scott Mitchell. What'd you make of that Nate Pearson debut? Obviously, it was pretty ugly, but what's the reasoning behind that? What did you see in the body language? What's your read on what exactly went down?
Yeah, I think he needed some of that hay that's kicking around Bobby Baffert's barn.
Yes,
there.
He does. He needs a groom in Houston.
Everybody needs that hay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, if you don't have any hay, you need some command. And, you know, there's no command yesterday. And that's the thing. Look, this is what it is with pitching prospects. And, you know, of course, Nate Pearson is nowhere near kind of a refined product at this point. And, you know, I think they rushed him up here a little bit simply because of the situation. They don't have many other options right now. You know, behind the obvious three guys in the rotation and then Stripling, there's a clear spot and a clear need. And look, I don't know what it was. You know, was it nerves? Was it, you know, something mechanically? He just couldn't find the zone. And, you know, talking to him afterwards, he said he felt pretty good. But it was just kind of one of those starts. When you look at it, he was 98.2 as a max max with the heater, and kind of didn't have that real crisp kind of stuff that you look at. You know, 16 sliders, not one swing and a miss. You know, that's just not going to cut it, and that's not what Nate Pearson is. So, you know, the Blue Jays are going to evaluate here. They wouldn't commit to another start, but I think when you look at the depth chart, you look at some of the injuries, and you look at the upside of something clicking for Pearson and him being able to get through those five innings, you know, that high upside, they're probably going to run him out there again, and, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think, you know, ideally, you know, maybe four or five, six starts at AAA to let him find his command, his rhythm, and really settle into those mechanics, because he hasn't pitched a whole lot in the past year. You know, that might be ideal, but, you know, we'll see. The big league team probably needs him more than anybody at this point right now.
We were talking about Pete Walker, what he could actually say to Pearson, just kind of like, what you put your arm around the guy, and what is the course of action? Is it like, let's watch the tape, or like, what the hell does he say to him after that performance?
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much you can say. You go back to the drawing board, and you wonder if it's nerves. I mean, he did look a little stressed out on the mound. He kind of reminds me of Marcus Stroman in a way, and when things aren't going well for Nate Pearson, you can really see it on his face that things aren't going well. He's very demonstrative in the dugout between innings. You can really see it weigh heavily on him, and you could see that from the beginning yesterday, and you're like, uh-oh, this isn't Nate's best stuff. So, I mean, you know, he's such a big video guy, and the Blue Jays are so into that. You know, they'll see if they can find something with the mechanics to tighten up the command, because, you know, it wasn't even close yesterday. And that's the thing. And that's where you wonder, you know, do you run him back out there in five more days, considering, you know, how important each game is? Or, you know, do you send him back to AAA and let him work out the kinks there?
Well, and that is quite the conundrum they're dealing with here, because their rotation is really starting to fall apart, quite frankly, when you look at the stats. I mean, I referenced this at the start of the show, but they have a staff ERA of 4.88 that is tied for second last in the American League, and they've only thrown 135 collective strikeouts, which is second last in the American League, and all Shapiro and Atkins said throughout the whole offseason, got to throw strikes. It's not happening. And this was the concern throughout the offseason, is once you get past Ryu, you're really rolling the dice. I mean, this is earlier than I thought it would be, but it kind of feels like a pretty significant moment here in terms of the crossroads of the season, because the rotation is really starting to struggle here.
Yeah, 100% agree. It's not sustainable kind of the way they're finding success right now. And I think that final kind of wave was lost over the past week with David Phelps and now Rafael Dolis going down. So, I mean, the bullpen has, you know, essentially been mix and match, and at times running on fumes, and at times just using, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14 different arms to find success. And somehow they have. But you can't sustain that, you know, into the summer months and down into the stretch drive here. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. They need more length out of their rotation. I think when you look at it, Ryu missing that one start hurt obviously a little bit, but having him, Robbie Ray pitching pretty well, and Steven Matz has been up and down. He's obviously come back down to earth a little bit here, but you know, I think he's proven that he's a capable rotation arm. You know, mid-rotation flashes probably settle in more in the back end role. But when you look at it, there's clear two rotation spots up for grabs, essentially. And I think that's why they called on Pearson, is because he's clearly the highest upside option they have. And they need to figure out what he is, you know, heading into the trade deadline this year, because I think it's going to really affect their priorities and what they look at. You know, if they think they can turn him into a starter and get some quality rotation outings out of him over the next 3-4 months, then maybe you look at it a little bit differently. But, you know, it's starting to trend towards maybe multi-inning bullpen weapons. So, you know, it's been real fluid, but they're going to have to figure something out here, because it's only sustainable for so long the way they're doing it right now.
Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter. Vladdy, day in, day out, looking more and more comfortable at first. Obviously, that's the plan for him moving forward. But what have you made of him positionally, the comfort level, defensively at first?
Yeah, I think he's looked tremendous there from day one. And when you look at his skill set, you know, we've talked so much about his size and weight But he's got pretty nimble feet for a big guy and pretty good hands as well, which is kind of the skill set that allowed him to stay at third base as long as he did. But now it's kind of transitioning over to first, and you're starting to see kind of some of the work and the buy-in that he's kind of put in over these last 6 months kind of translate a little bit with those skills and the work ethic kind of combining. And yeah, he's looked great. And I don't think there's any reason to even dabble with him at third, even with that being a hole. Now you kind of look at the, you know, veteran trade market to address that, and you just leave him there and let him hit, man. That's all you need to do. And then that's going to be what, you know, makes or breaks this guy's career. And it's obviously going to make it the way he's swinging it these days, because he's affecting that whole lineup. It's everybody around him and the way pitchers have to attack him. So, you know, he's that middle of the order force that everybody thought he'd be a couple of years ago.
Absolutely. Good stuff, Scotty. Enjoy the night off tonight, buddy. We'll do it again later in the week.
All right. See you, boys. Take care.
Scott Mitchell, our TSN 1050 Jays reporter. Jays off tonight, in Atlanta tomorrow. And you look at the American League East, you know, like, I think it's time to start taking Boston seriously. They got the number one offense in baseball. Like, they're lapping the field in terms of run production. And they've won four in a row now. Yankees are back above 500. Tampa, you know how pesky they are. They're going to be in the mix, you know. So the Jays are still above 500. It's fine. It's not like this is some big problem that they're dealing with. But it's going to be a race. You know,
Red Sox fans have hot takes, I'll tell you that.
Oh,
beginning of the year, dude. Beginning of the year, dude, it was, this is going to be the longest year of my life. 2 weeks later, Red Sox are winning the World Series. It was, it's outrageous.
So
oh my God.
Jacked up down there. Ray's coming up. Ray's a Red Sox fan. We'll put a quarter on him. I'm sure he'll be obnoxious about that. Get his take on the Leafs from over the weekend. A lot of NHL stories out there. That more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.